Check, check. Can you hear me in the back?
I can hear you.
All right. Welcome to episode 3, ladies and gentlemen. This episode fueled by, I'm going to slaughter this, Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy, Pride of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Delicious beer.
Welcome to episode 3. What is today? I forgot to timestamp the other one. It's August 14th. My name's Linus. Probably don't need introductions at this point.
No, we're good.
All right. So what are we leading off with?
So let's do what looks like will be the final saga in the Kevin Love drama. It looks like Cleveland has finalized the trade. They're going to send their two most recent first round picks,
Wiggins and Bennett.
Yep, they're going to send Wiggins and Bennett, and then a future first rounder to Minnesota, and then Kevin Love, of course, will go to Cleveland in exchange. The only reason it can't finalize yet is Bennett signed his rookie contract, so I think it's about 2 more weeks or so before he can be traded.
24th, I believe. But so are they getting a 2015 first rounder, 2016?
You know, I don't know if the details have come out on that. That's a throwaway pick anyway. I mean, we've talked about it in the past where Cleveland is going to do decent enough where it's not going to be a lottery pick. So it's just kind of there as, you know, as a sweetener, filler to the deal.
Right, but you're essentially getting 3 first round picks at that point, 2 which are, semi-proven commodities, and a future first-round pick for Kevin Love.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for both teams. Obviously, Cleveland is, you know, fully aware that they're in, you know, win-now mode. Kevin Love gives them that. They give away, you know, two young players that don't fit that, you know, that criteria. I mean, if you look at Cleveland's starting lineup, I mean, that's a pretty loaded starting five.
Word.
I mean, you got Kyrie Irving at the point. You're going to have Deion Waiters at shooting guard. You got LeBron at small forward. You'll have Love at power forward, and have Varejão at the center.
So Varejão is going to start at center.
I think so.
Right on.
You know, I think he's a good defensive presence, and you know he'll give you some solid minutes. That's a really tough lineup to bet against. I wouldn't want to see him in the playoffs in a 7-game series.
That's for sure.
So, you know, and for Minnesota, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's a small market team. They're going to be reloading as it is. Why not go for the guy that was being, you know, declared probably the highest ceiling prospect out of, you know, the most recent draft? I think it makes the most sense for them too.
Right, right. You know who I like more than Anderson Varejão though?
Who's that?
Zydrunas.
Oh, Ilgauskas.
The 7-foot Croatian. Croatia, I want to say.
Lithuania.
Yeah. Lithuania?
I think it's Lithuania.
I don't know, man. I thought it was Croatia.
One of the Anians.
Maybe, maybe you're right. I think Jean Tabak was Croatian. Anyway, I just like saying, my name is Zydrunas. How may I be of assistance?
And a shout out to Ilgauskas.
Right.
But, you know, so that's pretty much, you know, the only other parts to that. Kevin Love has agreed that after he's not going to sign an extension now, he's going to opt out anyway, and then they're going to sign him to a max 5-year deal.
Right.
So Cleveland is basically set, you know, for the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, because you're going to have Irving at max, you're going to have Love at max, and then you're going to have LeBron. I don't know if you can squeeze a third player in at max. I guess. Because even at Miami, they had to give up, you know, some money to fill out the roster.
At this point, does a max contract really matter if you're LeBron James?
No.
You're making hundreds of millions of dollars in endorsements. You just made how much? Like $30 million for the Beats deal?
Yeah.
You don't give a shit. You got I don't care money at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm him, I would do the anti-Kobe. I would take the veterans minimum
right
for 5 years and just say, look, let's go get a ring.
You know, exactly.
Let's just load up this roster. And but I don't know that the NBA or the Players Union would allow that, because it'd be ridiculous to see it. I'd love to see him try though.
I would love to see it happen just for the simple fact that it would throw a shock in the system. You know, like the way that athlete salaries have ballooned in the past 20 years, you know, it would be nice and refreshing to see someone say, you know what, I'm for real about bringing a championship home. Let's do this.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that really would be, that'd be a nice precedent to set. And who knows? I mean, LeBron would be the, you know, would be one to do that. I think that, you know, he's shown that with his decision to come back to Cleveland, and maybe that'll be the next thing he does. So.
He is. He's a trendsetter. I mean, as much as I don't like the guy and his receding hairline, he is a he's an impact. He makes an impact on pop culture as well as the league, you know, and it's one of those things that if LeBron was to give Cleveland a hometown discount, you know, who's to say you wouldn't see other stars doing the same thing?
Yeah, I think it would. I think it would be really cool to see that become a trend, as opposed to, you know, people just going for max money, you know, whatever sport it is, and just trying to, you know, try to make the most of themselves, and then that's it.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, that's pretty much all I was thinking about for Kevin Love. I mean, if you want to stay in the NBA, the Clippers have officially been sold now to Steve Ballmer.
Right.
Got pushed through for $2 billion.
$2 billy.
So that's. That's, you know, that's out of the way. We'll never have to hear about the Sterlings again, hopefully. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting. I want to see the I mean, the Clippers were already an up-and-coming team. I mean, with just the roster and the talent that they had. I mean, Doc Rivers is a great coach. Now they're going to have Steve Ballmer there, and he's, I mean, he's got money to burn. So
he's got Mark Cuban money.
Yeah, I mean, he's you know, former Microsoft exec, so he's
right.
You know, he's gonna have money to throw around. Yeah, like you said, like Mark Cuban. So
deep pockets.
Yeah, I'll be really really interested, even more so now, to see how far, you know, they can push that.
I don't think he's got pro hurrah pockets, but he's got deep pockets.
Oh, for sure.
Deeper than Jay-Z, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So what else we got? We got to stick on the NBA. You want to move to the NFL?
Oh, we can switch it up. We can talk some NFL. So let's see.
So speaking of athletes' salaries ballooning, how about that Dalton contract?
Man, I mean, the numbers, 6 years, $115 million. I mean, to me, that, again, you talk about LeBron wanting to take a discount. I mean, this is the opposite of that. I mean, this is
right.
Get yours, and that's all you're worried about. The NFL, I want to give Dalton a bit of a pass, because even if it says 6 years, $116 million, or $115 million, I'm sorry, what'd you say? Only, you know, so much of that is guaranteed.
Right. It's, you know? It's really, it looks, it's got that sticker shock to it, but a lot like the Kaepernick deal, it's basically an initial deal, which is, I mean, for Andy Dalton, it's a good deal. 2 year, $25 million deal. Not bad, you know, with, you know, escalating incentives, of course, and based on performance, I'm sure, like playoff wins.
Right.
And whatnot. So it could balloon up to wind up being $115 million if the team opts to keep him for all 6 years.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's anything we know about the NFL, it's the fact that, you know, he's not going to see out the end of that contract. It's going to be 4 years or so, and that's going to be the end of it.
Right, exactly. A lot like Colin Kaepernick if he lasts 4 years in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think he'll, you know, that'll be the trend there. I mean, but, you know, $20 million a year. You know, this seems to be the going rate for your top flight quarterbacks. I mean, off the list, you've got, you know, your number one guys are going to be like an Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco,
Matty Fat Sacks.
Yeah, Drew Brees. I mean, Peyton Manning, you know, is only making $19.2 million a year.
Yeah, but he's got the mitigated risk contract. You know, like he basically signed for like league minimum for the first year, and right. Then this is the second year of escalation in that deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's and you know, we talked about this you know, pretty constantly about the whole thing before the Falcons signed Matt Ryan, and how I was, you know, just entertaining the thought of, well, what if you don't re-sign him? You know, what if you don't handcuff your team and put like a sixth of your salary cap? I mean, with the NFL being a, you know, a hard cap league, you just cannot go over that number. I mean, what if you were to take it and not spend that money? You know, if you outfit the team. I mean, if you look at Seattle, if you look at San Francisco, well, prior to the big Kaepernick deal, that's why they were able to load up the entire, you know, rest of that roster, is because one of the highest paid positions, probably in this day and age, the highest paid position, you know, now that running backs are completely devalued, is that, you know, you save a ton of money. I mean, $20 million a year versus, I mean, I don't even think Russell Wilson is cracking $1 million. I mean, he's on the cheap. You know, he's on the rookie deal.
I think him and Kaepernick were both at like a half million. Kaepernick just got re-upped, though, so he's going to make, I want to say like 9 or 10 this year. But the thing is with Matt Ryan is that you had to do that. As the Falcons, like it was more about having a new face for a franchise that was defamed, and, you know, to bring them up from the ashes, you know, with a brand new choir boy face, you know, proven commodity as well. You know, not to just say that Matt Ryan's there just for personality. I mean, the dude has, you know, legitimately brought the Falcons back to relevance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could definitely do far worse than having Matt Ryan as your starting quarterback. I mean, I think the only thing is, yeah, you just have to look at it where, I mean, is anybody going to be worth a sixth of your salary? I mean, you could argue that when healthy, all of those guys, I mean, Aaron Rodgers for sure, Drew Brees for sure, Peyton Manning for sure. Outside of those three guys, you know, I mean, Tom Brady didn't even make the list of the top 10 highest paid, like per year average. I mean, it's, so you just have to worry. I mean, when you look at the top five, the guys that stick out are going to be Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco. Although with Flacco,
he just won a Super Bowl.
He walked in and you know, and lucked into that Super Bowl win. I mean, that right. was, you know.
Did you see the story after he signed his extension to make him officially a member of the $100 million club last year? He went and drove through and got him some chicken nuggets.
I did hear about that. I think he splurged and got the 20-piece.
That's right.
Maybe he got the large.
Mama, I done made it. I'm getting me a 20-piece.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, the more I think about it, yeah, the thing with Flacco is he didn't make, you know, he didn't have like huge statistical year, but
he managed the ball.
Yeah, and he went 4-0 through the playoffs, and he beat a lot of quality teams. I mean, so he got the job done. You know, kudos to him. I'll always be a little bit curious to see how he progresses, because we had the choice that, you know, that year between basically Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco, and the Falcons went with Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan's a better quarterback, hands down.
I think overall he is. Flacco's probably got the bigger arm, but
sure.
Be on that.
You can have a big arm. I'll take accuracy, poise in the pocket, and the face of the franchise. I'll take it.
Yeah, and like you said, there was no way that that Arthur Blank was going to okay taking the risk of, you know, grabbing a quarterback from like Delaware. I mean, it just wasn't going to make a lot of
right.
you know, a lot of sense when they're trying to reshape the, you know, the franchise's image. You don't want to take a risk at the quarterback position.
He was on eggshells, you know, and it's one of those things where also how do you say no to a proven commodity? You know, when we did re-up him, we'd been to the playoffs back-to-back for the first time in franchise history, right? We'd never had.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, turning that corner was enough for Arthur Blank to be like, all right, you know, I'll reach into my Home Depot pockets and go ahead and break you off with some cheese. It's cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, the only qualm I have, and, you know, the only reason I, you know, even thought that the whole Andy Dalton deal was just, you know, was just something newsworthy is, you know, is how much it costs. I mean, you can have the money, but it's not like baseball, it's not like, you know, even basketball where it's a soft, you know, a soft cap. I mean, you just, there's X number of dollars and you just cannot, you know, go beyond that, you know, that figure. So, you know, it remains to be seen, you know, whether that's going to be a smart way to allocate, you know, your cap space every year.
Right. I don't know. I mean, it's I think the most surprising number off this list to me was I don't know where I was headed with that. I'm sorry. I had it and I lost it. Oh well.
Jay Cutler. Tony Romo.
But yeah, probably Tony Romo, man. Honestly, like, I would have just... I mean, how are you going to go and give Tony all that money and then bring Whedon into town? Like, really?
Yeah.
What message are you sending here?
Yeah, it just doesn't... Yeah, I don't know. That's Dallas for you. I mean,
Jerry's lost his mind.
Yeah, it's... Dallas is going to be a mess. That's for sure. Their defense is going to be awful. And Romo's surgery hasn't, you know, completely healed up, so it's gonna be a long season for the Cowboys.
Who do you got winning that division?
Doesn't it have to be Philadelphia?
No, man, no. Chip, nah.
I think it. Man, honestly, I mean, whatever whatever issues that we, you know, that we saw before, you know, he came to the pros, whether or not that style of offense or that pace was going to work or not. I think, you know, the first season showed that, yes, it'll work. I mean, it took a little bit of time. I'm not saying that, you know, that it's going to work indefinitely. I mean, look at how everybody adapted after the Wildcat phase came in for one season. You know, so now we're in the hurry up, you know, and pistol phase, and then we'll see how, you know, how those teams fare and how, you know, primarily how Philadelphia does with that, you know, with a high octane offense. But, you know, the East is just so bad. I couldn't imagine anybody else winning but Philadelphia.
I see a big regression out of Nick Foles this next year. I think, where he's going to have this is his second year. He wasn't a bona fide rookie yet last year, was he?
No, I think
he
was a second-year player. Second year, yes.
But his rookie season was spent riding pine, so it was basically his rookie season.
Right.
But the point is that this is the third year, the precipitous third year in a quarterback's career. You know, we always see that, you know, the first season to second season reduction in performance as well. So you're going to see that and the third year at the same time. And I think you're right. I mean, as the league adapts to Chipper's offense, and plus the loss of DeSean Jackson, you know,
that's big too. Really is. That's a big deal.
It is. I think it really. I mean, the dude's a tool. I mean, it was time to part ways. But the point is that he makes that offense go. He's one of the key parts of that offense. And I think they're going to try to replace him with Darren Sproles. But that's quite a downgrade in my opinion.
And that's the thing. I mean, there's a difference between being a fast, you know, receiving threat and being a downfield receiver. And Jackson was, I mean, he gives you that vertical threat, you know. And I mean, I love Darren Sproles. I mean, I think he's a great, you know, he's a great addition to any team. I like the fact that he's evolved, you know, from that third down specialist, you know, to a bona fide, you know, home run hitter type of guy anytime he gets the ball. But yeah, let's not mistake Darren Sproles for being a vertical threat at the receiver slot. He'll do a lot of good things for that team, but he's not, you know, he's not gonna
stretch the field.
Yeah, he's not replacing DeSean Jackson.
I like the Giants out of that division.
Who's gonna run the ball? That's what I'm wondering.
Who cares?
I don't think New York has done enough significantly, you know, to get any better. They're not going to get. I just don't see how they got better and gain any ground over the Eagles. I just can't see. You know, I mean, the Eagles would have to really screw things up, I think, this season to not win the division. I mean, the Redskins aren't going to win it. The Cowboys aren't going to win it. I mean, I guess maybe the Giants will, you know, put something together. They do have a great quarterback.
They have a decent receiving core as well. I really like their passing game. And their last time I checked, their defense wasn't bad. Were they kind of middle of the pack last year?
I think so. I mean, we'd have to look up some of the stats. But again, my
they were 10th overall against the pass and 14th overall against the run. So a mediocre defense.
Yeah, mediocre to above average. I mean, they're definitely not slouches on the defensive side of things, but I mean, and Hakeem Nicks had a terrible season last year.
Hakeem's gone, man. He's an Indy man.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying, like,
right.
Last year
he was hurt.
They didn't
most
have
of the year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was just, you know, they did not have a great receiving core, and I don't know that they did enough to improve in that area. You know, so like you said, yeah, they might not need a running back per se. But then you better have, you know, a great, you know, receiving, you know, core, you know, so you can just sling the ball around, you know, like Denver does or like Atlanta did last year, you know. But, you know, short of that, I don't think they have that. You know, they don't have, you know, two great wide receivers and a great receiving threat, you know, either at the tight end or out of the backfield. You know, if you don't have that, I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be tough to be a pass heavy team.
I think their committee of running backs looks a lot like Peyton Hillis, Brandon Jacobs, Rashad Jennings, and rookie Andre Williams. I like Hillis as a goal line back. I like Rashad Jennings as a as a shifty back out of the, you know, catch passes. Little shifty running back out of the backfield. I like him. And, you know, old molasses Brandon Jacobs, man.
Yeah, that's what I looked at, and I said, okay, they're in trouble. When you bring Brandon Jacobs back, then you're kind of reaching, you know, at that point, you know, where you're revealing the fact that you have some concerns, and Brandon Jacobs isn't the one that's going to solve them.
No, but I think that was a move where Coughlin's like, listen, I need a guy that knows the system, you know, plug and play. You know what I mean? He's that guy, you know, you can lean on him for about 8-10 carries a game, you know, but he'll pick up the blitz.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the rest of the NFL in general, I haven't really thought too much about it. You know, we got fantasy season's getting ready to hit, you know, hitting full gear.
Right. It's hard to discuss the NFL without fantasy implications.
Yeah, and you know, I tend to not be as, you know, as connected to it until the season really starts. I mean, I've been paying attention to what the Falcons are doing, and I think that, you know, prediction wise, it's hard not to see, you know, Seattle get deep into the playoffs again. They're just, you know, they're going to continue to benefit off that that rookie contract, you know, of Russell Wilson, you know, freeing up all their money. You know, they're already having to spend some of it, you know, to extend the contracts of their, you know, key defensive players. But I think they're still too loaded, you know, to not see them, you know, get it to probably at least the conference championship.
Yeah, they definitely got lucky with that Russell Wilson pick. The getting back to the Matt Ryan deal, I don't think I'm willing to sacrifice the future of my franchise for a crapshoot, you know, whether or not I'm going to get, you know, a Brady Quinn or a Russell Wilson. You know what I mean? Like, for every Russell Wilson, there is a Ryan Leaf.
Oh, for sure. And that's the thing. I mean, when we talked about it, you know, in the past about, well, in looking mainly at the Falcons offense last year when everybody was healthy, or maybe even 2 years ago when Tony Gonzalez was, you know, was 1 year younger, you know, my argument was that you could pretty much, I could have played quarterback, you know, for that team and put up some yardage. I mean, they were just that loaded offensively that, you know, that you could almost plug and play anybody, at the quarterback position, including a rookie at a much lower, you know, wage scale than what we were expecting, you know, with a Matt Ryan extension, which puts him at the $20 million range, you know, per season. But I don't know.
So maybe we should touch on college football.
Yeah. Yeah, you talk about predictions and things like that. You know, what about the advent of the 14 playoffs that we're going to have starting next year? You know, you're going to have, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I know we were talking, you know, prior to.
So it is going to be a 14 playoff.
Yeah, it'll be four teams, and then I'm sure that once the money continues to flow in, they'll expand it, you know, to eight.
So you think this is like a trial run this year?
Yeah, I can't remember how long they're committed to running this 14 playoff. But as soon as that's over, I mean, college football is getting huge, and they're gonna make a killing.
They're already making a killing.
Yeah, that's very true. But I looked up Phil Steele, his predictions. I think that, you know, if anyone hasn't checked out, you know, the college football Bible that Phil Steele puts out every year, you're doing yourself a disservice. I haven't gotten it in several years, but the years that I have gotten it, he is, you know, the most accurate predictor, you know, of final season standings and top 25 lists and bowl, you know, bowl bids and things like that. He puts a lot of work into his craft. He's really good at what he does.
The dude spends all year writing that manual to college football.
Yeah, it's
such
amazing.
A wealth of knowledge. It's so dense. You know, yeah. I feel like after it's definitely a reduction in productivity. I'd say my bathroom time is increased by at least 30% every time I do. You scoop me up a copy of the Phil Steele Guide, but it's so good that I thought I read somewhere that Phil Steele is working for ESPN now. Like,
I think, yeah, he's doing some correspondence with them, and good for him. I mean, like I said, you turned me on to his guide probably close to 10 years ago.
More than that, man.
And it was, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, big shout out to Phil Steele. Maybe we could reach out to him at some point and get a copy, you know, to kick off each season. And even then, I would gladly pay, you know, the market price for the guide. It really is worth its weight. But anyway, getting back to the 14 playoff, I referenced Phil Steele's predictions, and you know, wanted to share that. So his predictions for the 14 playoff. So in the semifinals, in the Rose Bowl, he's got Alabama meeting up against Ohio State. Yeah, I can't argue with that. You know, the only argument that I could have is maybe Michigan State, you know, finds a way to win the Big Ten and then takes Ohio State's place. Beyond that, you can't argue versus Alabama, you know, getting in.
No. If that is the result, Alabama rolls Ohio State.
Yeah, I think so.
Michigan State also has to get past Oregon. I believe they have them early in the season, like week two, I want to say.
I'll have to take a look at that. I learned a lot from Michigan State last year, you know, when they won the Big Ten. And, you know, it's credit to Mark D'Antoni and his coaching staff. You know, they've been in the shadow of Michigan and in the shadow of the rest of the Big Ten for years, and they just, you know, they keep on finishing in the upper third, upper half of, you know, the Big Ten every year, and it's impressive. It's an impressive job they've done. But yeah, I don't think either, you know, Ohio State or let's say Michigan State, you know, would put up a fight, you know, much of a fight there in the Rose Bowl against Alabama.
No, not at all. So is this determined by final? So it's basically the final ranking, right?
Yeah, I tried to do some quick research on it, and there's gonna be a selection committee, so you're still gonna have that
the human element.
Yeah, you're gonna have that bowl bid feel, so I'm sure there's gonna be some considerations taken into, like, okay, what fan bases will travel well. That's the big knock on the playoff system, you know, is that college football fans don't want to travel that far,
man,
that many times.
Man, go watch a game that features an SEC team in Eugene and tell me how much orange is in the stands, you know, for Tennessee.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, everyone travels well. That might have been an argument back when everyone had to take buses everywhere.
Right.
But nowadays, everyone travels well.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is that, you know, you've got the fans that are going to these bowl games already. They're not the broke college students that are sitting in the student section.
No, they're the alums that have the cash to go do that kind of stuff.
These are the guys that are that are helping to boost, you know, the program, and that are, you know, that have the kind of the disposable income that would allow for a, you know, a road trip to, you know, to Pasadena, to New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl.
Or to catch a flight to Jacksonville to watch UGA beat the hell out of the Florida Gators this year.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, should be another good one.
Shout out to Mr. Peacock for hooking up the tickets to that. I'm going to come see you in Jacksonville. And, you know, a little preview. I'm going to try to talk to Mr. Peacock and see if we can't get a little link up with his square plays and feature that on future episodes of the podcast.
Yeah, I really enjoyed some of his predictions, and I think he'd make a nice addition as one of the pieces we go on.
A little guest spot.
Yeah, for sure. So then the other semifinal that Phil Steele predicts, this will be for the Sugar Bowl. He's got Florida State and Oklahoma. You know, again, I mean, you know, preseason-wise, it's hard to argue Florida State. They return the Heisman winner. You know, they've got a great defense. They lose their defensive coordinator to our Georgia Bulldogs.
What up, Coach Pruitt?
Yeah, but they're going to be, you know, he did not leave the cupboard bare. And, you know, it's going to be another productive season for Florida State. Oklahoma, I mean, have they been relevant? I mean, they've always been really good.
Man, didn't they beat Alabama last year?
Did they?
They did. I'm saying that team is
Alabama was demotivated for that one though, because they didn't make the championship.
Demotivated or not, I don't give a shit. You got to get up for a bowl game.
Yeah, that's true. especially if it's against Oklahoma. You don't want to let your fan base down.
And you're talking about the difference of like 8 million versus 4 million. You telling me you're not going to get up for a $4 million swing? Come on.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, how much of that money are the players seeing?
Oh, zero. And that's the problem. Speaking of which, you know, I'm going to sidetrack it here for a sec, but when do we start paying college players? At least a minimum, you know, like the did we talk about this already?
I don't know. I don't think we hash it. It's worth talking about regardless.
I feel like we should pay college players, man. I mean, at least something to get by. You know, like schools do it now. University of Nike, a.k.a. Oregon, Phil Knight has sunk so much money into that school that when they recruit athletes, you know, they say, okay, you're going to come live here in these dorms, which are like high-rise condos,
right?
You know, like flat-screen TVs, you know, the whole nine. You know, they put you up real nice, you know, state-of-the-art gyms and all that good, you know, stuff. It's, in a way, you know, I can remember when Hines Ward and Philip Daniels came to speak to my middle school, they rolled up in two brand new Lexuses.
Yeah.
You know, like, come on, man. Like, there's little, you know, benefits.
You know, yeah, you know that players aren't not getting benefits. I mean, there's no denying that. You know, I remember seeing one of the boosters, at the mall, and you would see him doing, buying like gifts for, recruits and for star players. You know, just luxury type items.
Bags on top of bags on top of bags.
Yeah. And everybody knows who he is, and it happens. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I really do agree that, for a sport that will essentially fund the rest of your athletic department, I think it makes sense to kick some benefits there. I mean, and I don't, I'm not trying to discredit the value of a college education, because that is a great, benefit that these players are getting. That probably wouldn't have been able to afford had they not been on a full football scholarship. But let's face it, the cycle of life there for football isn't, contingent on these athletes getting a bachelor's degree and turning around and having a good career and then kicking money back to the school as a mid-level management or something like that. I mean, what you're wanting is NFL players making multi-millions of dollars donating money for new athletic centers, practice fields, things like that.
Right.
So I think that, I agree. I mean, it is valuable. You do have to attach a value, to that scholarship. And, credit, to the players that play football are not going to make the NFL. And they take it upon themselves to make the most of that opportunity and get that degree, because that's what their career is going to lead them to.
Right.
But, for the players that are going there to play in the NFL, they need to finally decide that there should be some stipends there. Teams or players are getting them already anyway. I mean, you're lying to yourself if you don't believe that to be true.
I think that, the hard part is how do you determine who gets what? You have to just set a minimum, and keep it equal across the board. So basically, your backup long snapper is making as much as, Braxton Miller. Type deal.
And I think that's where the conversation begins to bog down. Because not only do you worry about, how much do we pay Jameis Winston versus the third string, slot receiver that's playing special teams, and that's about it.
Well, you get a discount because you could pay Jameis, $10,000 a year and unlimited crab legs.
There you go. He forgot that. See, it was just a big misunderstanding. See, the crab legs, I heard, were buy one, get one free. So he didn't realize that you had to actually buy one to get. He just wanted the get one free part.
Nah, man, I heard that they were sponsoring, all FSU senior or freshman quarterbacks get a free pack of crab legs. He just misread the advertisement.
Yeah, I mean, and that whole thing, speaking of Jameis Winston, another failed Twitter event was held by Florida State Athletics. They had a they did a hashtag campaign with Ask Jameis, and I guess the first hour was just completely flooded with, you know, talk about stealing crab, dodging, you know, rape accusations. It just, you know,
basically a day in the life of Jameis Winston.
Pretty much. You know, they said, one of the best questions that I saw, and I mean, I don't quote me on it, but the gist was, who gave you better protection last year, your offensive line or the Tallahassee Police Department? And, you know, when you look at it, and if you've ever lived like we have in a college town, that happens. You know, the players are protected, except maybe in Athens, because all of our star players keep getting arrested.
Man.
You know, so maybe we got it backwards, you know, in the classic city, but it's not far-fetched to think that the Tallahassee Police Department did let Jameis Winston get away with an alleged sexual assault. It wouldn't surprise me if that was the case.
It wouldn't either, you know, me neither, but when you think of it in terms of, okay, how many rape cases, allegations are raised on a college campus, you know, on a daily basis?
Oh, for sure.
And how many of those, you know, what percentage of those happen to deal with a football player who will potentially be worth, you know, $100 million?
And that's always the tough question to ask, right? Because you always have to start to worry. You know, sad state that we live in, that you have to look at every angle, and one of them being, is the person making the allegations really, you know, presenting a case because something happened to them, or are they just gold digging?
Right.
I mean, that speaks on, you know, on the society that we live in, when you have to worry about that.
So if I had to pick between the two games, I would rather watch Florida State versus Oklahoma.
That should be a fun matchup. Yeah, that should be a pretty fun matchup.
That'd be a great matchup, and I'd take the Seminoles.
Yep, I think so, and Phil Steele would take them as well. He voted, or his prediction there for the final would be an Alabama-Florida State final. Basically, what should have been the final last year, had Auburn not had the miracle, you know, field goal return for a touchdown.
Had Auburn not become the most lucky team in all of competitive sports history 2 weeks in a row, or two games in a row. Was it 2 weeks in a row? They had the game in between SEC championship and then Georgia. So no, it was back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, because they had the Georgia game, and they went straight to the Iron Bowl and then won that on the miracle too.
And then shit the bed in the last 18 minutes of the
Natty. 20 minutes or so, and they decided to hand gift wrap the title to Florida State.
Which, you know, I mean, it was a great game to watch. It was fun. You know, I was a little disappointed because I wanted the SEC to continue their reign of dominance. But, you know, hats off to FSU for getting it done.
Yeah, and you know, that does suck because that was going to be the last year, or that was the last year of the BCS title, and the SEC had won every single one. And so it was
8 out of the last 10.
No, I think they took home every single one. BCS national title. Ever since it's
how long was the BCS? Was it 8 years?
That was the 8th year, and we won 7 out of 8.
Wow.
I mean, it was just like, that's just how it was. And that means that there were SEC teams that beat the tail end of those USC dynasties.
You know, Fatty said it best.
And beat Texas.
Fatty said it best when we were watching the Natty before last, Notre Dame and Alabama. He said, you know, it's kind of disgusting, but it's true, that the SEC just kind of sits on its throne every year and says, bring forth your champion, and slays them every single year until the last one.
And that's pretty much how it happened. And
you can't win them all.
Yeah, 7 out of 8 ain't bad. I mean, it was a ridiculous run. I don't think any conference, you know, will be able to top that, you know, or approach that anytime soon. And, you know, that year where Notre Dame got into the title game, either team from the SEC championship would have won it. You know, had Georgia,
easily,
pulled off that last second
easily
victory over Alabama, they'd have rolled up on Notre Dame too. I mean, that's just,
I was,
you know,
so heartbroken. That's probably the closest we'll ever come to a national championship in my life.
Well, you know, if we want to sidetrack a bit and talk about Georgia specifically, I think they might be a dark horse candidate this year, depending on how quick Pruitt can get that defense
to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Playoffs?
I think so. You heard me right, Jim Moore. You heard me right, man.
Playoffs.
You know, they're not, they're barely in the top 15. You know, I think they're, you know, they're 12th in the preseason poll.
Our secondary is more like a tertiary.
Yeah, but
it's,
you know,
terrible.
What? But see, that's the thing. I look at it as a positive. Our secondary was awful last year. Having Jeremy Pruitt coaching the DBs and the defense in general, I think even though we lost three quarters of the starters, well, we won't be any worse than we were last year.
Don't get me wrong. I like Georgia to win the SEC. You know, I like Georgia to make the playoffs, but I just don't think realistically, I'm not betting. I wouldn't bet $1,000 on it.
I wouldn't either, but you know, I think they're
bet a
dark horse.
I might bet a Benjamin.
They're a dark horse. You know, they can, if everything breaks their way, they ought to be able to win the East. You know, you play South Carolina, you beat them, and then we should roll the rest of the East.
You know, and you think we're gonna beat South Carolina?
I think so.
Man, I don't know. Look, in Columbia.
I think, Todd Gurley is a Heisman candidate.
He's
right,
legitimately
the
best running back in the league.
We return probably the best backfield duo from last year with Marshall coming back from injury. You add two more, All-American players behind those two guys.
You think Chubb's going to see the field? Michael Sony?
Yes, Sonny Michelle.
It's Browns Michelle
it's
for
basically,
real?
Yeah, it's basically another... You know, Thunder and Lightning combination with Marshall and Gurley. You got Chubbs, who looks like a Herschel Walker clone from some of the some of the snapshots that I've seen online, and then Michelle is the speed, is a speed guy. Both were highly touted running backs coming out of out of that class, and I mean, it's just one of those situations where the defense might be crappy, but dude, we could run the ball 45 times.
Oh, I agree, man.
And that defense might not ever have to see the field.
Hopefully not. And we returned all of our linebackers. You know,
linebackers are back. The defensive line is pretty much intact. So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's a long shot.
You know, it's not like we're going to be fighting to win the East. I mean, we have one game to get up for, and that'll be against South Carolina.
Right. You know, I think the first two games, Clemson and South Carolina will really define UGA's season next year.
If we do well against that state, then we will be looking pretty good, heading into the, into the back half of the season.
You know what I like the most about Phil Steele's projection? No 12-pack representative.
Yeah, I think he had, see if I can pull it up, I think he had Oregon pretty close.
I don't think Oregon. Here's the deal, man. Oregon has Stanford, UCLA, and Michigan State on the schedule next year, if I'm not mistaken. Stanford's beat Oregon two out of the past 3 years. So,
yeah.
I think the smart money is on Stanford to beat the Ducks for the third year in a row. And I don't want to say they're going to win the 12-pack because I don't know enough about the 12-pack to make a real rational decision here. But aren't they in the same division as USC?
Who?
They're in the South. Stanford.
Stanford's in the North.
Stanford's in the North?
Yeah.
Well, because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, they had to take one of the Cal schools, and they picked Stanford just to basically mess with Oregon.
Okay, so UCLA and USC are both in the South then?
Correct.
Well, the point is that, let's say Stanford wins the North. Oregon's in the North as well.
Correct.
So Stanford beats Oregon, Stanford wins the North. Stanford still has to beat USC or UCLA.
Right.
To win the Pac-12.
Right.
12-pack. I don't see it happening. I see UCLA. I'm going to say UCLA wins the 12-pack.
That's going out on a bit of a limb.
I'm
going
to say UCLA wins the 12-pack.
They got some talent now, but I don't know. I think it's going to be the whoever wins the North is going to win that Pac-12, man. I think that, either Stanford or Oregon, whoever gets out of the North should go ahead and beat UCLA. I mean, that's a strong UCLA team, but if you're going to beat either Stanford or Oregon, chances are you're going to do all right. Going into the Pac-12, the conference championship.
Right.
UCLA is looking really good. If Sarkisian doesn't get that ship turned around, they're going to get left pretty quick because Mora's got a good thing going there at UCLA. And they're quietly, taking over as kings of Los Angeles as far as college football goes.
When does USC come off of sanctions?
This year, I believe.
So this is their first year off sanctions?
Correct.
So they have their full scholarships this year?
Right. Well, they had, but I think their roster's still short because they had 3 years of reduced scholarships. So, they need to hit the ground running, this year and next year. And Sarkisian's bringing that new, that new offense, more of the hurry-up style. That's
Auburn, Oregon clone.
Pretty much.
So UCLA returns their quarterback, Brett Hundley.
I think he's going to be a Heisman candidate.
Candidate, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see Gurley win it.
I couldn't.
You said Mariota earlier. You think Mariota wins it this year?
Dude, I hate to say it, but yeah, I think.
After Mariota loses to Stanford and UCLA?
That's what I'm saying. If he stays healthy. I mean, and it's an if, but he looked like he was locked to win that Heisman last year before he started succumbing to injury.
I just don't see a Heisman winner coming from a school that doesn't win their division.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that. I don't think Stanford's going to win it this year. I think Oregon's going to break through. I think they're going to finally get it.
There's too many catch games, man. There's way too many catch games.
Well, I agree. Because, in the past 2 years, it's been Oregon's time to dominate. They've been chomping at the bit ever since Dennis Dixon, was trying to get him into the title game. And then they went the bet against Auburn. They've been knocking on the door. I think they'll get there this year.
Yeah, they didn't just wet the bed against Auburn, man. Let's call a spade a spade. They got housed.
Yeah,
that
the
score
final
was
score, yeah,
it was not
score
indicative did. of the pulse of that game.
Yeah, it's about as it doesn't tell the full story. Just like the Oregon Stanford final score last year. It looks like it was a lot closer than it was. Stanford was having their way with Oregon pretty much all game, and then Oregon scored a late
special teams touchdown. You know what tells the story of that game was it was right before the end of the first half. Oregon had a second and goal, and what did Chip Kelly do? Second and goal from inside the five. He runs it directly at the teeth of the Auburn defense, right up the middle, barely stuffs it. Third and goal. Right up the middle, barely stuffs it.
Yeah.
What do they do on fourth down? We got them right where we want them. Let's run it right at Nick Fairley.
it's like he expected a different result. And Fairley is currently holding down an NFL position. So
on the best defensive line in the league.
Yeah, that's a pretty nasty deal.
Fairley and the Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, that's a defensive line that I wouldn't want to line up against or catch in a bad mood in a darkly lit alley.
Right. That is quite fierce of a defensive line. I bouncing it back to the NFL for a sec. I see Detroit making a little bit of noise, man.
I think so.
I know so. That team, I think that one of the most slept on moves in free agency is going to be Detroit getting Golden Tate from the Seahawks.
They needed to do something. Our boy Matt Stafford, proud UGA alum, proud backwards hat wearer, and I'll get back to that in a second. But yeah, they're at that point where they just need to decide. They need to go all in and just go ahead and get them some more weapons. Getting Golden Tate made a lot of sense.
Right. They needed a bona fide wide receiver too. Megatron can only hold it down for so long. He can only beat so many triple teams.
Yeah, and you gotta have. And I thought that Pettigrew would have been the answer there. That tight end that stretched the center of the of
big
the
ass end zone target.
Yeah, but he hasn't panned out. And didn't they drafted another receiving threat type of tight end? Was it last year or 2 years ago? They've been trying. So maybe Golden Tate's the answer. Maybe Nate Burleson won't hurt himself trying to save his piece. It's a dangerous team. The defense has the potential to be great. And if you get an offense out there that can put a team down two touchdowns quick, that's going to make that defense all that much nastier, because then they're going to be able to pin their ears back and just come after the opposing quarterback. So, but yeah, okay, real quick, that whole backwards hat thing, it was something that got mentioned as far as. You got this contingent of quarterbacks that go with the backwards hat look, and it's the conspiracy theory is that is what's holding these guys back. Members of the backwards hat club. We already mentioned Matt Stafford.
Didn't Steve Young rock a backwards hat?
Hey, that's not part of what we want to talk
he
about.
He was successful,
he doesn't
though.
Count. He doesn't count. He's too far back. He's too far back.
Okay, go on.
But you're talking about...
BYU, Cougar, what up?
Yeah. You got Tony Romo wears his hat backwards.
Romo.
And he has never made the leap from great or good to great.
Romo's a choke artist, though, man.
Exactly.
There's a reason why in my household, when we refer to someone choking under pressure, we refer to it as "don't pull a Romo,"
and it's because of the backwards hat. You know who else is wears their hat backwards?
Who else?
Jake Cutler wears a backwards hat.
He does.
You see where this is going, man?
Jake Cutler also has diabetes.
Does he have diabetes?
I think so. He's got the sugars.
Well, you know
the sugars.
You know, check your blood sugar levels.
Man, he's a member of the $100 million club, too.
There's two members of that club that wear backwards hats, and it's those two guys that are, you know, holding themselves back because they choose to wear their hat backwards. It's a bad look. It makes you a bad quarterback, you know, and that's proven in the NFL. I just gave you three reasons.
But does it make you a good center fielder? Because Ken Griffey Jr. made the backwards hat relevant again.
He did. Maybe so. I mean, maybe one of those guys should check it out. You know, maybe they should play center field sometime.
Man, I think Stafford could throw someone out at home easily.
He does have. He's got that cannon arm. What you want to bet I could throw it over the mountains?
Man, if Coach would have put me in back in '82. Nah, Stafford's got that laser rocket arm though. Schwartz is gone though. So
that's right.
They're not gonna throw it nearly as much, I don't think. Caldwell is. He's more of a balanced attack kind of dude, if I'm not mistaken.
Caldwell, Indianapolis coach, former. I like Caldwell, but they were known to sling the ball around. But they had Peyton Manning and them.
Man, yeah,
he was there for the beginning of Andrew Luck's tenure.
That was Peyton Manning saying, "No, we're gonna go for it on fourth down, coach. I got this."
Yeah, and it's hard not to throw the ball around when you've got an All-Pro at quarterback, and you got Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne at one point. And then you had Reggie
Young
Wayne.
Reggie Wayne.
Yeah, then you have Reggie Wayne and
friends.
Yeah, Pierre, the likes of Pierre Garçon.
I like the Colts this year, man. Reggie, T.Y. Hilton.
I like T.Y. Hilton a lot.
Hakeem Nicks.
I hope he bounces back.
I like Hakeem Nicks.
He's got
big
ass hands. I remember that. He's got huge hands.
Man, he's got athletic prowess too, man. The dude is a beast. I'm telling you.
He can palm a watermelon.
Palm a watermelon?
I don't know.
The shit on YouTube or what, man?
Might be. If it's not, he needs to do that. All I know is I've heard that he has, like, catcher glove size hands.
Man.
Maybe that's in his, that, man, it's probably in his combine report.
I just remember the highlight reel when he got drafted and this crazy circus catch. And then, like, the next highlight was another circus catch. And then the next highlight was another circus catch. And you're like, maybe this is just the way the dude catches the ball.
Yeah. He's got to make it look glorious, man. But, you know, shout out to the North Carolina Tar Heels putting out a product that doesn't play basketball.
Man, what's their coach? Butch?
Butch Davis.
Butch Davis, man.
Former Miami you know, head coach there.
I like the way that he made the Tar Heels relevant again in the football world.
Yeah, I like that the North Carolina's representing in something other than basketball. Even Duke looked okay last year with David Cutcliffe coaching up that team.
I think between North Carolina and Clemson, they've kind of made the ACC relevant again.
Yeah, I mean, but that didn't take too much. I mean, that was a one trick. Yeah, one trick pony for a long time. Yeah, you had the Clemson, Clemson show with Tosh Boyd and
Sammy,
Frosty's favorite player of all time, Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins, aka Mr. Frosty's man crush.
There you go.
But what else should we talk about, man? We're coming right around the hour mark.
Oh, backtracking to college football. I forgot to hit on this earlier. We already talked about the 14 playoff prediction. Just real quick, just two quick notable teams. I mean, for those in the Northwest region, Phil Steele predicted Oregon to get to the Cotton Bowl where they would match up against Baylor. I think that was the highest at-large bid, so just shy of making the 14 playoff. So Phil Steele likes the Ducks. No, I can't argue against that. And then for our hometown, the Bulldogs, he's got he predicted them into the local game, the Chick-fil-A Bowl, and matching up against Michigan State. Didn't we play them
recently?
We've
played them like 2 out of the past 3 years.
That's becoming a regular thing.
Yeah, let's not do that again.
Yeah, but you know, you know,
we lost to Le'Veon Bell, man. The Le'Veon Bell iteration with big-ass Muhammad Wilkerson clogging up the middle.
I'm telling you, man, that's what they do.
Fuck that team.
That's what I'm saying. You gotta respect the Spartans, man. They just put the.
I don't gotta respect shit.
They just put a good product out there on the football field. You know, I'll give them the props there, man. So, but anyway, I just wanted to backtrack. I thought that was wanted to hit on that earlier before we get too far away from it.
Man, I honestly just think that speaking of Michigan State, shout out to Steve Smith, former Atlanta Hawk,
yes,
part of the Spartan family. They get Oregon in week 2, and I just don't think Oregon is going to be ready. Oregon is going to lose to Michigan State in week 2 and against Stanford as well. You know, either Stanford or UCLA, they're going 1-1 against those two teams, and they're going to lose to Michigan State. So how do you get an at-large bid with a 2-loss Oregon team?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look that up real quick.
You know, if we had our news guy, he could look it up for you.
I know, man. We're going to get that sorted out.
Yeah, we got staffing issues on the cast.
We're going to make this happen. Yeah, so if you're an aspiring statistician, like to talk sports, you know, send in a resume. You know,
as long as you have a sexy, buttery voice and you're an aspiring statistician,
but yeah,
preferably with an East Coast bias.
There you go. I think that now. I mean, now that you mention it, that could be tough. I mean, you talk about Michigan State.
In
Stanford,
week 2, man.
And UCLA. They.
I'm saying Michigan State that early in the season. That's a catch game.
Yeah.
It's over.
You could mess around. You probably mess around and lose at least one of those 3. You might mess around and lose 2 out of 3.
And you're done. You lose 2 out of 3, you're done.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Done.
Then you're done. But we'll see what happens. Like I said, Mariota is, you know, props to him, man. I mean, I had no idea this guy was going to be this legit coming out of Hawaii and being able to run that offense. But we'll see what happens.
You know who else came out of Hawaii and was highly touted and never did shit in his career? Timmy Chang.
He did plenty in his college career. And then Georgia ended it in that Sugar Bowl win.
42-10.
Yeah, that was nasty. I think we broke Timmy Chang's will to live after that point.
Do you think that they did the warrior dance after that loss?
I don't know. But poor Timmy Chang, he probably still has nightmares about that game.
Man, it's probably not bad to be Timmy though. He's probably living it up, sleeping in a hammock right now.
Yeah,
eating coconuts for breakfast.
Yeah,
and shit.
He's doing all right. But every now and then he wakes up crying, you know. Wondering why he couldn't. Wondering why his receivers couldn't get open. Wasn't Devon Bess on that team?
He was, man.
You know,
he was.
I mean, there was
Devon
a little bit of talent.
Bess.
I mean, there's a little bit of talent on
shout
that team.
Shout out to the dreadlocks.
Yeah, you know, shout out to.
Shout
Staple.
Out to the Predator look.
There you go. You know, rocking the Predator dreads, man. Looking like he's coming out of the SWATs.
Looking like Ricky Williams with a shell in his dreads.
But you know, it's what happens sometimes, man. You play out of Hawaii and you put up these big numbers, you know. Much love to June Jones.
June Jones, he's still the head coach?
No, he's not there.
Ah, shit.
He moved on. He was at SMU for a while. I saw him. He came by. They came by and did a charity event at a undisclosed location here in the Portland metro area.
Nice.
But I hit him up with the Go Falcons.
Hell yeah, man! I would have took a selfie. I'd have been like, "Yo, you're taking a picture with me? I don't give a fuck."
Yeah. But you know, he's out of there now. I know he went to SMU shortly after that Sugar Bowl loss. I don't know what he's doing now.
Living it up somewhere.
But yeah, man, I'm good. If you wanna put a wrap to this one, we can call it. You know, we've been rambling
yeah.
for about an hour.
Yeah, so. We'll go ahead. Shouts out to June Jones,
yep.
And what else, man? Wrap it up. Wrap it up, B.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to wrap on. I mean, I'm just looking forward to the fourth episode. I'm really hoping, like I said, I'm really hoping that we can add the the third partner in crime.
The third wheel to our wheelbarrow.
Yeah, so that way we can make this happen and put together an even more quality product for you guys. Really enjoyed doing it. Really looking forward to the next recording.